From 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, it's The Build. Conversations with entrepreneurs and innovators about their dreams, their triumphs, and their challenges.
Pizza, dough, sauce, cheese, it's a simple recipe. And the goal of a simpler lifestyle lured Mason Wortman away from a fast-paced job on Wall Street to a dollar slice shop in Philadelphia. Developing a great product at an affordable price took Mason nearly a year, but what happened next landed him national attention from the likes of Good Morning America and The Ellen Show. On this episode of The Build, Mason shares how he's not going to let the spotlight change his quest for simplicity, even as he navigates his business through some unexpected and unprecedented growth. It's the story of Rose's Pizza Shop, coming up next on The Build.
The Build is made possible with support from 2820 Press, providing business consulting and content strategy services to customer-obsessed companies nationwide. More information at 2820press.com.
It's The Build. I'm Joe Taylor Jr., joined today by Mason Wortman, founder of Rose's Fresh Pizza here in Philadelphia. Welcome.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Good, good, good. So I often talk to folks who, and I'll frame this up differently. So for a blip of my career, I was a financial journalist. And so I interacted with a lot of folks on Wall Street and in the city in London. And I found that there was a certain kind of personality I would interact with a lot, folks that were very driven, very sharp. From what I understand, you got to Wall Street and interacted with a lot of folks and kind of came to a revelation.
Yeah. Yeah. I had just gotten a little bit tired of the work. I wasn't learning that much. And I'd always wanted to own my own business. So I left Wall Street, and I saw the success of the dollar pizza spots throughout New York, Manhattan specifically. I thought it was a concept that could work back home in Philly.
So Philly's your home. Mm-hmm. Grew up whereabouts?
Plymouth Meeting.
Okay.
Montgomery County, right Montgomery outside County. The city.
Right on. Excellent. So you come into Center City, you find a location. Mm-hmm. Now, dollar pizza is not usually the first thing that first-time entrepreneurs lean into.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like the small, simple businesses, you know, elegant business model. And I just thought it was, you know, you have to have something to sell. And if coming from Wall Street, all I knew was like analyzing stocks and valuing stocks. And I was good at it, but a lot of people are good at it, you know, and I wasn't the best at it. And if you're like just good at it, it's tough to get to make a living off of that. Cause there's a lot of people there that can do it. And the people that want those services can normally do it on their own. So yeah, I just, you know, that was out. So, I had to pick something, and, you know, if you make a mistake in pizza, it still tastes like cheese. Like it's still pretty good. Right. So I just thought it was a concept that I could make work back home.
So what I'm hearing is you're not going to create a Lehman Brothers level calamity if you get the balance of cheese and sauce wrong.
Right. If there's a variable missing in your formula, if Excel is referencing the wrong cell, you know, you can lose a lot of money very quickly. But, you know, if you mess up a pie, if you burn a pizza, if you, you know, put too much sauce or too little cheese or whatever, people will still come back for a dollar, you know?
Did you come into this with any kind of family heritage in pizza or any just...
No, no culinary skills are in my family. My sister's the best cook of all of us. My dad can cook a few things very well. That's it. But I came from a family of entrepreneurs. So my mom's father, my grandfather, owned his own business selling clothing. Closed in like the 80s when he retired, and started way back in the 30s. And my dad owns his own business. He sells golf course supplies to golf courses. So, you know, things like getting orders out to customers, making sure they're happy, making sure you get your product in on time from your supplier, dealing with employees. This was all stuff that I heard at the dinner table and learned about. So especially at Roses, I see a lot of parallels between golf course supplies and men's clothing that many people that come into Roses and enjoy our pizza probably don't see, you know, but there are connections that have helped me make Roses, I think, successful.
It's an interesting thing that comes up again and again on this series when entrepreneurs grow up in entrepreneurial families. You know, we see sometimes there's always that concept of the family business often struggles to carry on across, say, by the time they get to the third generation is usually when you have the generation that says, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do my own thing. But they typically feel okay or feel like it's not as big of a risk to do something entrepreneurial because they've grown up with those experiences or those lessons. So how did that inform your decision to just start opening up in a time when everyone's going nuts for technology businesses that scale really huge? You say
absolutely
brick and mortar, cheese and sauce.
Yeah, you're right. So I think you just have to start small and get started. And so when people come, you know, now I hear a lot of business ideas all the time, and there are these like kind of pie in the sky business ideas, you know, and people want to be the next Microsoft and Google and Facebook. And I would love for Roses to be the next Chipotle or Facebook or Google or Microsoft. But I think that like those businesses didn't start and think, oh, I'm going to be a, you know, billion dollar, hundreds of billions of dollar business, in valuation. They, you know, Mark Zuckerberg started a cool website that he liked, and Chipotle started with one Mexican spot, and Bill Gates started with Trafo data in like the 80s and just started playing with computers. And I just, you know, when I looked at the technology startups out there, you just have to be so able, right? You have to, because the people that are now in that business aren't the people in the 80s that were trying to figure out how to create a word processing program, or people in the early aughts that are trying to figure out how to build a cool website for people to interact on like Facebook. They're people that, you know, all that stuff is already out there and super commoditized, and you really have to have some really brilliant, you know, idea there. And that's not me. Whereas like food, it's just a much easier business. You know, I mean, the people aren't nearly as educated for sure. They don't have super advanced science and math degrees. But also it's just easier work. You know, people get hungry every day. They need to eat. So that was, you know, it's partly just starting out small and trying to play a simple game. That's really what helped us sustain ourselves in the beginning.
So you're coming from New York back to Philly. These are both towns that are pretty finicky about pizza. And so another counterintuitive thing that you do is you differentiate on price as opposed to trying to build the fanciest brick oven or get the char just right.
Again, like all that stuff's very complicated. You have to be good. You have to have experience and all those things I had none of. And a dollar slice, you know, that I get. So, you know, I didn't have any relationship with the owner of 99 Cent Fresh Pizza or Two Brothers Pizza. You know, I just had a relationship with spending a dollar and getting a slice of pizza. And, you know, obviously thousands, millions of people had that same relationship in New York. And I thought the same people could have it back in Philly. You know, it's about, you do have to be different and you have to do something no one else is doing, but also something that everyone else wants. And I thought this fit those criteria.
And your next step after this is to investigate recipes, or you buy Pizza Making for Dummies off Amazon. How did you get to the point where you felt comfortable that you were making a good product and building a system for people to make that product?
Yeah, this is something that doesn't that isn't going to be on Ellen DeGeneres or Good Morning America or anything, but we were making bad pizza for like 6 to 9 months. And also not getting much media attention because we weren't doing a very good job. So, you know, it's scary at first, but it's trial and error. And, you know, there's nothing like sexy about it, where I, you know, I don't know, came up with some special algorithm to calculate how to make the sauce. The dough, I kind of did, but that's all ratios, right? That's easy. The baking is straight math. But sauce and cheese and the amounts of everything and like the how to stretch it out and how to make a large amount of pizza quickly, but also keep it fresh. All those things were trial and error, you know. Oh, we tried tossing it out this way. We'll try the other way because the first way made it too thin or too fat or something. And that's how all products become products, right? That's how they all get created. They, you know, everything I eat didn't taste good the first time. But
it's the core definition of what technologists call the lean startup, right? Mm-hmm. So over 6 to 9 months, you're just iterating. You're just making new versions of the product. But you brought up Good Morning America and Ellen. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons why not every pizza shop owner in Philadelphia, for sure, has been invited onto national media. And I think one of the reasons why is because you've taken a broader definition of customer into account when you think about who you're serving. So if you're not already sick of telling the story.
no problem.
Bring our listeners up to speed on why you'd be getting a phone call from Ellen DeGeneres.
Sure. So we opened up in December of 2013. About 3 months later, March of 2014, a customer came in after having read a little piece about us in the Metro. The piece said that the pizza wasn't very good, but now it's good, which was awesome to hear. And he said that he asked if any homeless people came in because the article did note that we serve a lot of homeless people. And serving homeless people, I knew would happen. So I had read articles about the dollar slice places in New York, and they mentioned that a very rewarding aspect of the owner's life is that they get to feed homeless people for just a dollar, right? The homeless people still had to pay, but they could finally afford food on a daily basis. And they said that was rewarding. And I was not being that emotionally rewarded back on Wall Street. And I was like, oh, you know, that could be a good feeling. We'll see what happens. But, you know, at least I thought at least I would be providing like a substantial good, you know, that's a noble cause, right? To provide affordable food. I didn't know how affordable it would end up becoming, but the customer, though, back to the story, offered to pre-purchase the next slice for a homeless guy that came in short because we would have to turn them away. And he referenced a tradition in Italy called Cafe Sespresso, where you can pre-purchase cups of coffee and the cafe will put an empty cup on a shelf behind the register. And so people can very visibly see the status of the Cafe Sespresso program. And people in need with complete dignity can ask to redeem it, and, you know, they'll fill up the cup and go on their way. And so he suggested I use paper plates as a method of accounting, but they were a little too big and they didn't naturally adhere to the wall. So I got post-it notes and just put one post-it up. Inevitably, a couple days later, we had told more paying customers and they bought more. And then a homeless person came in and, you know, only had a couple cents in his cup, but we told him to keep the change. It was already paid for. And it's just spread through word of mouth. And then Ellen DeGeneres show found out about it because we were on the local news for it. And they put us on. And then it's just been like this whole year has been a total, it's been a blast.
So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is now on the back end of all of this media attention, all of the focus on the social impact element of the business that you've created. How's that informing or changing how you're operating the business day to day or how you're thinking about scaling or growing the business?
Okay. So, I mean, so I'd always want to grow this into a chain of pizza shops. Now I'm looking to expand it in different ways that are probably a little bit better for society, people in need. So, you know, we're starting to get into clothing where we sell hats, gloves, winter accessories, and we give away another one to someone in need. It's turning into a more locally focused kind of poverty alleviation business where, you know, in this day and age, people shouldn't really have to worry about basic needs like food or warmth. And we're so good as a society of manufacturing items that, you know, fix those needs that, you know, we should be able to figure out a system to get them into somebody's hands that needs them. So we're starting to do that. I want to make something a little bit healthier than pizza and work that into the Pay It Forward so that it's a more sustainable business. You know, you can it'll be a little bit more expensive, like a $5 ticket item, but with that comes like, it'll be able to expand to other areas that aren't so like urban or densely populated. And we'll have, you know, a dollar to Pay It Forward item where you can buy food for the next person in need. So yeah, it's definitely morphed. The concept has developed, evolved, you know, you figure out what your customers want, what's been successful, and you try to do more of it and grow that way.
How have you observed a shift in your customer base since getting attention this way? Do you see more people making a deliberate effort to come into your establishment versus trying to just convince their local corner shop to adopt the same process?
Oh yeah, absolutely. People always want to go to the place where they saw on TV, you know? So we first, of course, get, you know, a lot of homeless people coming in that need the free food, and that's great. We serve like 100 homeless people a day. What's really cool though is, well, two more things that are really cool. One is that we get homeless kids, which isn't cool, but it's great to help people kind of in need that are just starting their lives. You know, a lot of the older homeless people that we see have totally made some mistakes and they're trying to get their life back together. But a lot of the people that are born into this situation, all of the people that are born into that situation through no fault of their own at all, are totally victims, right? They are dealt a terrible hand of cards to start, and it's just horrible what they A, have to go through young in life, and B, how little they're likely to achieve for the rest of their life. They're very crippled, not physically, of course, but you know, throughout the rest of their life, they're gonna have to overcome that. And so I would love it if Roses could do something to fix that problem. And then the second is that we see families come in from suburbs, you know, trying to teach their kids about paying it forward, helping people in need. And it's great to like be like a part of that also, where we're kind of a symbol of helping people, but also like the context that in which someone can help somebody, a stranger, really. And that's been a nice evolution that I've noticed.
It sounds also like there's a frictionless element to it. For instance, I think about folks like Blake Mikoski, who founded Tom's.
Tom's, right. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a guy that basically won a reality show, used the money he won from a reality show to invest in a business that was geared from day one for social impact. And so now you're in kind of the Philly flavor of that, which is about a dollar slice, mm-hmm. where everywhere else in Philly is probably a $2.50 or a $3 slice. Yeah. So if I buy at Rose's, mm-hmm. I can just invest the difference.
Yep. Okay.
Exactly. And it becomes a very frictionless way for me to stay within my lunch budget.
Yep.
If my lunch budget is $2.
Yep.
You know, I can buy a slice for me and a slice for somebody else, mm-hmm. and not necessarily go through the process that professional nonprofit fundraisers usually have to go through, where it's a lot of Sarah McLachlan video, a lot of kind of let's pull at the heartstrings.
Yeah.
This feels like a very simple way for somebody to just say, throw in an extra buck.
Exactly.
In this moment.
And I hate that stuff. So like, you know, I get it. They have to do what they got to do. And like, I don't begrudge them for it at all. And it's a nonprofit, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But I hate doing that kind of work. Like if I had to do that kind of work, I would hate my life. They clearly love it and that's cool. They probably hate doing what I do. That's fine. Different Strokes, but like Roses never asks for donations, basically. But we can help people. Like, I never want Roses to ask for donations. I want them to ask for payment for sales, like any business, you know. But I specifically instruct all my cashiers that, you know, there's one working there right now while we're talking. And like, she does not ask, like, and would you like to donate to Roses? Because two reasons. A, like, I think that's like incredibly annoying when you're there, like, no, I don't want to donate right now. I'm just here to eat. When you go to Kmart and they ask you, you know, that question, I just wanted, you know, please don't make me feel guilty for coming in and just buying my vacuum cleaner that I needed. And B, we have a lot of people that, you know, don't have a lot of money, and the dollar or $2 that they spend on themselves for their own food is like a hard stop, right? They can't go, they have a very strict budget they adhere to, and I love being a part of that and helping them make their budget. And I don't want to make them feel guilty for sticking to it and taking care of their own needs. So, yeah, those, Roses will never do the Sarah McLachlan benefit concert or anything, just cause you know, and to sustain the program, we got into branded t-shirts and summertime apparel and that kind of stuff. So that we wouldn't have to always be sending out emails and, you know, annoying our followers to say, we need more money, we need more money, we need more money. Like, at Roses, you don't really have to give anything. You're buying something, right? And you get to enjoy it. And I want to provide that, you know?
And kind of along the way, it's pivoted into somewhat of a lifestyle brand, mm-hmm. to the extent that you've got all of this non-pizza merchandise. Mm-hmm. If you think about a retail operation, you now have all these SKUs,
yes.
of things that are not cheese and dough and sauce and that you probably didn't expect you'd be selling a year out.
And you don't need to get me started on all the headaches that come along with that I have had to deal with especially over the past 6 to 9 months. So yeah, but I mean, I love having problems to figure out. And we recently just sent out our first email blast marketing kind of piece of marketing material that raised interesting questions that we had. Do we say this? Do we want to say that? You know, what's the point of sending this one out? Should we send it now or later? All these questions, you know, that it keeps business and life interesting.
So thinking now about coming back to the core of the business, Dollar Slices, mm-hmm. Storefronts, are you thinking about expanding? Are mm-hmm. you thinking about additional locations? What kind of math do you have to go through to find out if that's viable or not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the math I'm good at now, the numbers, the costs, you know, oh, I'll spend X on rent plus X on personnel, plus Z on food, and then, you know, a little bit more on all the other stuff, insurance and all that. And then, can I sell more than this dollar amount? I think I can. Let's go here. So, you know, it's interesting though. You said that the core is Dollar Slices and Storefronts. And I no longer think that the core is Dollar Slices anymore. If you asked me 2 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to own like $10 pizza stops. I'm going to be very successful. And now I think, you know, I don't want to be pumping cheap pizza into people that have no money. You know, I want to be providing them a wholesome meal, you know, maybe a grain, a starch, a vegetable protein, something like that. So, you know, I think the core business is, you know, affordable, wholesome food and helping people that need it with the food and also with the apparel. You need a storefront to do the food, obviously, and to distribute the apparel. So, yeah, that's, you know, I'm looking to stay in Philly, of course, and I love the city. So, you know, a different part of the, you know, tall building area. but, you know, I would just got off a call with my real estate broker to see where we can go, talking about rental rates and pricing, square footage, and, you know, the economic area around it. So we'll see where it is, but I want to do a second spot.
So what are the ingredients that go into that kind of site selection?
I like to be near tall buildings. You know, more buildings, more taller buildings, more floors of more people means more people to sell food to, because everybody needs your product. you know, especially for a food business. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking for. I don't like parking garages, and because there's no people in there, that's all cars. And I'm not crazy about schools. Everyone says like, oh, pizza goes with schools, but really the most successful stuff is the least sexy stuff. So I just want a bunch of office workers around that want to go out for lunch, you know, $5, five or six. So that's where I'm looking to go.
Do you deliver?
We do deliver.
So, and do you deliver just through your own phone? Do you use an app or?
We're on Yelp and Eat24 and Caviar and all those online ordering places. We're also, we also sell stuff online. I think the best way to get to us though is to call us. And yeah, we absolutely deliver on a bike.
The number of those kinds of apps and services that are popping up. You know, one thing I've heard from other food entrepreneurs is that it starts to put a little pressure on your ability to scale when you have a third party that's marketing on your behalf.
Yeah.
Because if Eat24, like, we'll pick on them for a second, sends out a blast to all their members and say, everybody should order from Roses today.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get, you know, what do you think is the maximum number of pies you can deliver in an hour if you got.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen much press that way. I don't really like these types of businesses. I'm only on there because it's better to be on there than not be on there. But they take a lot of money from the average check. It's just, and people don't order from Roses. They order from Eat24. Like, you know, I'm in business to build Roses up. And I understand the convenience that they provide to the end user, but I don't really like them that much.
And I think some of that comes from food entrepreneurs tell me all the time, food businesses, margins are some of the tightest of any mm-hmm. kind of business you can run.
Yeah.
So if you're working with a third party that says, oh, we'll just take 5%.
Yeah.
If your margin's 5.2%, which is in some restaurant folks I know say that's a great margin for the restaurant business. Yeah. Now you got 0.2.
Yeah. I mean, if I were them, I'd raise my prices online. It makes sense to me. If you want convenience, you should pay for convenience. If you have a very good, easy experience somewhere, you're likely to pay a higher amount of money than if you have an experience somewhere else where you have to do a lot of the work. So, you know, I suggest that they raise their prices, but I really don't like those, and the worst restaurants do all their business on there because you can't see the food. You have no relationship with the restaurant, with the people making it or taking your order. It's just like a food machine, and that's not how you make good food, you know? So it's just, you can't, you know, people write in the little box, extra crispy, lighter, whatever, don't burn the chicken or something. And, you know, the guy who's making it just is interacting with a computer, and it just is not a great way to order food.
I think the other thing that I heard and read recently was the situation in New York City where the health department cracked down on a bunch of quote unquote restaurants that were on, I think it was Grubhub, that weren't real restaurants.
Oh,
they were out of people's apartments.
Yeah.
Things like that.
That's funny.
And they basically had agents kind of tail the delivery person back to wherever it is they were going.
That's funny.
And it was somebody's house.
People in New York are smart though. That's clever.
You gotta give somebody credit for thinking, well, no, you know, people are ordering from the app.
Yeah.
They don't know that this is not a real place.
Yeah.
Why not?
And the first person to do it, is a genius. I guess they got caught because there are so many of them, and you know, and it's a shame that's what happens. You know, someone comes up with a brilliant idea and it gets arbitraged, all the profit gets arbitraged away.
There
so
we go. And now it gets regulated.
Yeah, regulated. And that's it. You know, Wall Street, food, it's all the same stuff.
It all happens.
I mean, that's the other way. You could literally be buying stuff on Grubhub and it could be coming out of somebody's garbage disposal. Like, this is just, it makes no sense to me at all.
Well, now that we're all terrified of ordering smoothies online, think now to someone that's listening that's thinking of starting up their own business, or they, like you, are in a job that they're thinking, I don't know, that I think the cops are coming to get us now with all this fake food talk. But, you know, folks are thinking about this all the time. I'm in a job I don't love. Where's my passion? What advice do you give to someone that's thinking about ditching their job and starting something new on their own?
I would say start out really small. Like, when I started Roses, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be the next Google of everything in the world. You know, I just was like, I want to just make good pizza and everything will follow from there. And that's, you know, I think what has been responsible for most of our success. You know, I was there every day trying to make sure that the pizza was very good and that things were working well. And so I was there for when that customer came in with the brilliant idea to pay it forward. And, you know, I thought that I would be a hands-off CEO of just allocating capital and, you know, from day one, you know, I'd just be able to be like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett from the rip and, you know, oh, we're going to come up with a strategic vision and go with it.
Yeah. But Warren Buffett bought Dairy Queen and he goes there every day.
I know. And Bill Gates started coding, you know, he wrote the first operating system. That's what I didn't understand when I started, is that like, when, and now of course I make pizza like 2 or 3 days a week. Not today, obviously, but, you know, all the super successful people were just employees of the business, and in many ways they still are, I guess, right? They still draw salaries and they're, while, you know, Warren Buffett doesn't make any Frosties,
right? I think that's a Frosty.
Or is that in Wendy's?
No, that's a Wendy's. It's a Mr. Misty.
Misty, yeah. he doesn't make any of those or any See's candies, and Bill Gates doesn't code anymore. But Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the Google guys came up with the algorithm and wrote the first thing with the websites linking up and everything. And they just showed up to work and work. They weren't in charge of anything except for the product, right? They made the product. And that's what I didn't get. That's what I didn't understand to start. And if you're looking to start something, you should be comfortable with actually making your product.
So 10 years from now, you're going to bust into location 100, roll up your sleeves and say, hey, get out of the way. I'm going to sling some dough.
Let me toss this one out for you. Yeah. And the CEO of Domino's, he tosses pizza all the time. Well, now he's like super old. He's like 80, but he tossed pizza he had like pizza making competitions. He loved making pizza. And, you know, I'm not crazy about making pizza. I like running the business a little bit more and figuring out ways to help people more than actually like just the process of making pizza. But he loved it. And that's what Domino's is known for, right? Is just pizza, 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 all the, you know, that's the first thing you think of. And it's, you know, he started he bought the first Domino's. But he worked there 12 hours a day making orders, and then he went to the second one and made more orders. And it wasn't until like 3 or 4 where he was like, I'm just a full-time boss and managing people now, you know? And that was it's years from when he started. So, you know, whether you're the Gimlet guys that we were talking about that start they edit podcasts. They don't tell people what to do. They do, but most of their time is spent editing startup and all their podcasts. And, you know, you got to be comfortable, you know, getting your hands into your own product.
Fantastic. What are you looking forward to the most about the next year of the company's growth?
I really want to build out the menu. If I can provide affordable, nutritious food, and there's nothing like super unhealthy about our pizza. We don't deep fry it or anything. There's just nothing particularly healthy about it. But if I can come up with like a $5 to $6 meal item where it's, you know, some protein, some starch, some vegetables, and then you pay forward for like a vegetable protein and a starch, that will be a really powerful concept.
And if you do get an order from the online app that requests to deep fry the pizza, you'll know that they heard the show.
Yeah, and exactly. That's the other thing about these things. People ask for ridiculous stuff like pepperoni costs $2. But in the special comments, they'll be like, oh, also put a ton of pepperoni on the pizza. I'm like, you wanted to select the pepperoni. You didn't want to select the pepperoni option and be forced to pay for it. So now you're asking for it for free. But like there's
you
so
just
many,
failed at pizza.
Yeah. Like that, the whole thing is just so like, it's imperfect. Is oh, what I goodness. Would say.
Mason Wortman, founder of Rose's Fresh Pizza. Thanks for joining us on The Build.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Build. We hope you'll share this series with your friends and provide us with feedback on the iTunes Store. You can also subscribe to weekly updates and learn more about upcoming guests by visiting our show page at thebuild.biz. This has been a 2820 radio production.